and then invading your country. Just to show you how far he was from understanding us, his first question was, did honourable treatment mean we'd assist him against his enemies, and would we look after his family, wives, concubines, numerous offspring, etc.? Flad, who interpreted, put this to Prideaux, who said, being an honest English lad from a good home, that we do the decent thing. Goodness me. Flad was explaining this in diplomatic terms when Alamy, who had been hopping nervously as Theodore's scowl grew blacker, seized His Majesty's arm and drew him out of earshot, chattering 20 to the dozen. "Talking sense into him, I hope," says Prideaux to me. "Is the fella changing his mind? His army don't look like surrendering, I must say." Nor did they, ranged in their silent thousands on the lower slopes of Selassie beneath us, and on Fowler across the way. "Never saw so many glowering faces. Well, he'd better swallow the terms, 'cause they're the best he'll get. What? After the way he's carried on, keeping us chained for 2 years, torturing poor old Cameron, butchering his own folk right and left? Man's a blasted Attila. And if he expects Napier to just say, 'So long, old fellow,' and pack his traps, he's sadly mistaken." "He's mad, remember?" I told him. And what happened next bore me out, for Theodore began to rage and stamp as Alamy pleaded with him.
"Please, father, there is no hope,"
he was crying.
"The choice is surrender or death. The English de Jars swears that if a hair of the European's head is touched, he will tarry here 5 years, if need be, to punish the murderers. His words, father, not mine."
"Be silent, imbecile,"
bawls Theodore, and there and then sat himself down on a rock and dictated a reply to Napier at the top of his voice, while we and his chiefs and minions listened in disbelief. For you never heard such stuff, starting off with a theodocratic rant about the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, and then a great harangue, not addressed to Napier, but to the people of Abyssinia, and how they'd fled before the enemy, and turned their backs on him, and hated him, after the way he'd fed their multitudes, the maidens protected and unprotected, the women made widows at Aragi, and aged parents without children. Amazing babble, while he glared up at the heavens, and his admiring court exclaimed in awe. "He slipped his cable," mutters Prideaux, "God help us." But now Theodore seemed to remember to whom he was writing, for he complained that Napier had prevailed by military discipline, the implication being that it wasn't fair.
"And my followers who loved me were frightened by one bullet, and fled in spite of my commands. When you defeated them, I was not with the fugitives. Believing myself to be a great lord, I gave you battle. But by reason of the worthlessness of my artillery, all my pains were as naught."
You may think I'm exaggerating, that no one could blather such nonsense, but it's there, in the blue books, and I heard it up yonder on Selassie, how his ungrateful people had taunted him by saying he'd turned Muslim, which wasn't true, and he had intended, with God's help, to conquer the whole world and die if he couldn't fulfil his purpose, and he'd hoped, after subduing Abyssinia, to lead his army against Jerusalem and expel the Turks. And if it had been dark at Aragi, he'd have licked us properly. Not since the day of his birth had anyone dared lay a hand on him. And finally, a warrior who had dandled strong men like infants would never submit to be dandled by others. So there. When he'd done dictating, he had the scribe read it over to him, which gave Prideaux the chance to tell me that Napier sent his compliments and congratulations. The Gallus had the southern approaches sealed, and he'd dispatched another agent to Mastiat to see that my good work was continued. "Sir Robert was quite bowled over at first to hear that you had fallen into Theodore's hands, and Captain Speedy, what a remarkable chap he is, wondered if you hadn't allowed yourself to be taken on purpose." Prideaux was regarding me with that look of wary respect that my heroic reputation invariably excites in the young. "Sir Robert said, why ever should you do any such thing? And Captain Speedy said, it might be all for the best, because if it came to a point, you would know what to do. Sir Robert asked what did he mean, but Captain Speedy made no reply." Prideaux coughed and fixed me with an earnest eye. "I tell you this, Sir Harry, because after a moment's reflection, Sir Robert told me to give you his order that whatever befell, you were to remain with the Emperor Theodore and use your best judgment." He coughed again. "I'm not sure what he meant, sir, precisely, but I'm sure you do." I knew, all right, as the gates of fate clanged to behind me. Whatever befell, I was to use my best judgment to ensure that the Emperor of Abyssinia didn't leave Magdala alive.